Blue Jays Winterfest is Saturday, January 18th through Sunday, January 19th at the Rogers Center. You can go to BlueJays.com/Winterfest for tickets. Among the confirmed guests, the confirmed alumni, Juan Guzman, Tom Henke, Robbie Alomar, Pat Henkin, Cito Gaston, and the gentleman to my right, joining Tim Leeper and myself, Ricky Romero. Good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too. How's everything?
And everything's good. So Did you like your TV stint this season with the Vancouver Canadiens?
It was a learning experience, that's for sure. It was, it's different when you're up there in the booth and you really don't know what's going on and everything happens so fast. Mm-hmm. And it was a learning experience. I actually got to talk to Pat Tabler about it a lot. So he gave me some pointers and having Rob Fay there to kind of help a lot. So it was cool. And everything, I think every show, it got better. Mm-hmm. And it was a fun thing to do.
So you've seen some of their prospects.
Yeah, I saw some of them. I saw Manoah throw. Yeah. I saw Clausen.
What'd you think of him?
Good stuff, man.
He's a big man, isn't he?
Big boy. Big boy. Klopfenstein, I mean, mm-hmm. got great stuff. And, you know, from what I heard, their makeup is what makes them. And, you know, obviously the Blue Jays saw something in them to bring them in. And they should be able to help, hopefully, here soon. Probably Manoah more than anybody because he's a little bit more polished and more ahead. But
right.
No, what are you doing now with yourself? I saw on your Twitter feed, I saw you did a camp over in East Los Angeles for the kids back home. I thought it was awesome. But can you tell me a little bit about that? Because it was really fascinating.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it started as a joke between me and my – it was organized all by my friends. None of us have, like, marketing experience or any of that. But somebody knows somebody, and somebody knows somebody that makes shirts and this. And so we started putting our – ideas together. I'd always wanted to do something there. I just didn't know how I could pull it off. And so we did, and it was awesome. I mean, for East LA to have, for us to have that kind of impact there, it was great because I had a lot of former players, current players come out, and, you know, we try to kind of base it on inner city kids that don't get the exposure. I brought in scouts from three scouts from different teams. Just, hey, you might find a diamond in the rough here. Mm-hmm. You never know. So just more to motivate these kids. We brought in a USC, somebody that works at the University of Southern California to come and talk to these kids about filling out an application, dealing with the NCAA clearinghouse, because there's so many steps that you have to do in order to play Division mm-hmm. One or Division Two, whatever it is that you play. So it was very informative, and I think they all enjoyed it.
I was going to ask you, you know, one of the things that baseball is sort of struggling with right now is, and it's not just baseball, there are other sports as well, but it seems particular to baseball, trying to get more young people involved. We talk about how, you know, they're talking about speeding up the game to try to get more fans watching it. But I think baseball also needs to be aware of the fact that the growing communities in the United States are the Latino community, visible minorities, and you really want to be sure that you got roots in those communities when you're looking at future athletes for the future. Has baseball taken steps in that direction, do you think, Ricky? Is there still more that needs to be done?
Oh, I think there's more that needs to be done. I think these kids there really don't have the exposure. It's pretty much come down to, if you don't play in the perfect game tournament, if you're not part of a scout ball team, all that stuff means money. Mm-hmm. And some of these kids don't have those resources, so... When I set out to do this, I said one of my goals is going to be, obviously this was our first one, but the ones in the future, I want to make it bigger to where maybe it becomes kind of a exposure. And if we can change 1, 2, 3, 4 lives mm-hmm. into the future of baseball, then that we've done our job. So I think that's my biggest goal in it. I think I always say it, if I was playing it nowadays, I don't think nobody would have ever found me.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... Like I said,
well, how did you end up going to Fullerton?
Well, it started with the newspaper article.
Okay.
Yeah, I was on the LA Times. I was featured in it, you know, just a high school profile. And then one coach read it, and then another coach read it, and it kind of blew up. And I just think I was having scouts, Division I coaches come watch me pitch. But now you're not getting anybody because these coaches are all, and scouts are going to these perfect games and AFLAC, All-American, whatever tournaments. So
There's fewer scouts too now, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, they're cutting those out too. Is the Little League system still strong out there? Because when I was growing up, we were in our city and we had our Little Leagues and we had our house leagues and we had plenty of kids to play. We had fields and it was good and there wasn't the travel ball. But since then, I think the fields have gone away a lot. I go back to my old Little League field, like it's gone. And like you said, everybody's doing the things. But is there still opportunities for guys in the inner city to play?
I think there is. I just think there's talent out there. There's a lot of talent, but it has to do with money.
Mm-hmm.
And them not being able to afford past high school and the showcases and all that. I actually just signed up my 4-year-old for Little League this year. And
mm-hmm.
just to think, like $200 is what it costs.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, $200 for a 4-year-old? Like, what are they doing? You know, I mean, when I was growing up, it was $30, $40, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But $200 and it's just.
Get a uniform and a hat, though.
Well, and then we're in the area we live in, because I was disappointed because you don't get to be. I was like, maybe they can be a team, like, you know, the mm-hmm. Blue Jays or the whatever team that you get. But it's you got to sponsor a team and then you get to put your business across the jersey. That's the way it works there. So I was like, interesting.
Chico's bail bond.
That's exactly what I was going to think. Chico's bail bond. Exactly that came to mind.
That's the greatest movie. That was the most. My dad was Walter Matthau, which is unbelievable. But we had Z Medical Services.
I remember my first uniform was called Uniform Builders of all things. It was a building company in Ottawa. It was a hockey uniform. It was god awful.
Yeah,
it was Boston Bruins colors, and I hated the Bruins.
Us growing up, it was you were either the Dodgers or the White Sox, whatever team it was. You know, and my wife is like, well, if you want them to be the Blue Jays, you better sponsor them.
you've got people here. You can take
maybe
care
we
of
can
that.
Make would, it work, right?
Absolutely. Conversation with Ricky Romero and Tim Leeper. Tim and I were talking about this a little bit. The winter meetings start on Monday in San Diego. And I'm wondering from a player's point of view, Ricky, what's this time of the off season like? You know, with winter meetings coming up and you know that there are going to be trade rumors. What's that like for a player? When you were you following it closely? Were you not concerned but thinking about being traded? Or
no, I don't think I was ever in that area of being worried about being traded, but you're always wondering what the team's going to do. I mean, Leap, you've been in that clubhouse and part of those teams where you're wondering like, hey, what everyone knows what the necessity is in the clubhouse. It's no secret. The fans know, everyone knows.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of waiting. Yeah, you do wait and you're like, what are we going to do? You know, but at the same time, you still got to go about your business. I was out working out, getting ready and preparing.
Did you find that as the winter meetings went, or not as the winter meetings went on, but as the off season went on and you were focusing on, you know, on preparing, did you find that as you were in the game longer, it was sort of easier to focus on yourself, you know, be a little more, I'm going to say a little more selfish, but it's not the right word, but you know what I mean?
Comfortable.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Was it a little bit easier to do that?
I don't cut out
the background noise.
I kind of always was, you know, I always had that chip on my shoulder, not as a, like, I'm going to go out to prove everyone wrong, but there's somebody trying to take my job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how much money you're making or it doesn't matter. I always kind of carried myself like that. So anytime I got the chance to go out and put a good off-season work, I did it. And,
mm-hmm.
and that was my main focus. And so that when I came into spring training, I was ready to go and I was firing on all cylinders. And you know, that's just, I saw the way as a young rookie, the way Halliday prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that guy doesn't take anything for granted. And he's won Cy Youngs. He's been All-Stars and he's done it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that to heart with me. So as I prepared every offseason, I kind of, you know, just saw
mm-hmm.
just how it went, and that's how I kind of went about it.
Yeah, one thing I want to say to you, like, it was great because I was always around the periphery of you. My first year here was 13, and one thing, my first year as a coach here, like, how much a part of what you were meant to our success. I can remember getting off a plane in Anaheim or in Long Beach, and then everybody was going, "Hey, we're going over to Ricky's house," and like how much people like genuinely loved you. And again, I get to witness this a little bit from afar, but like how much you kind of even kept our group in together, even in 14 and 15. And like, and it's one thing about the Blue Jays. And again, this is the reason probably why you're here right now. Like it's really special and it's really great. And it's always been a family. I think part of it's representing a whole country. Cause everywhere you go, you've got people that are out there supporting you no matter where you are. But also I think the players that have played here also kind of adopt that mantra, like kind of from the fans and what the organization is. But like in 14 and 15, when guys were going over to your house and they were getting off planes instead of going out and just going to hotels and you guys were getting guys together, like, I want to thank you. Like you made my life better, but it was a testament to you as an individual, like what you meant to guys. And I got to hear them speak about you and how much guys really genuinely love you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate
your legacy still lives here.
I appreciate it. I always say it. I mean, one of the greatest things to happen other than the births of my two sons is playing here for the Toronto Blue Jays, and just being, like you said, being able to represent the whole country of Canada everywhere you go, that logo means so much. And I mean that was one of my biggest goals every time, you know, just make sure I have the guys together and whatever I can do. My mom and dad loved having everyone over every time we'd go to Anaheim, cook up for them and make a nice Mexican meal for them. So it was pretty awesome.
I never got invited.
You're a rookie. That's why I leave. No, I'm just kidding.
Rookie, old coach.
You got big league, man. You got big league. All right, I got a first base coach here who used to get into or who's gotten into arguments with teams because they thought you were stealing their signs. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a pitcher here. What do you guys read into the Houston Astros? All the talk about the Astros, the technological sign stealing, banging on the garbage can.
Yeah, I'm all for stealing signs the right way. You know, whether if you're tipping pitches, it's your job as a pitcher to fix it. If they're stealing your signs runner at second base, it's your fault as a pitcher. So I'm all for that. But to go to the technology and the banging of trash cans or whistling, whatever it was, I've watched some of those videos and it's pretty crazy what you see.
So you like, I've watched it too, but I'm watching it like, you know, fan. But you've been out there. You buy that, eh? That they were the banging and the whistling? I mean,
it's undeniable.
Like, yeah. I'm looking at it as a fan. I'm going, well, yeah, okay, maybe.
You've heard guys come out and say, like, I knew something weird was going on, you know? That, I mean, Farquhar was outspoken about it. And he like, saw it or felt it as he was pitching.
Yeah.
And
stuff was brought to the league. Like, it wasn't like this was, like, people knew. And even a few years ago when Boston played Houston in the playoffs, and their Boston pitchers were telling our guys, you know, that, hey, they hear stuff. And there's if guys steal signs, like, you don't want to, like, be a tattletale. But, like, at the same time, like, they're taking stuff. Like, I got friends on the Astros staff right now, and I'm thinking about the games we lost. And I'm looking at Tapera out there, like, dealing, having 0-2 counts, and then fouling off, like, really nasty 0-2 sliders to stay in the count to where maybe he hangs. I remember Bregman beat him with a home run one time, and I'm thinking, holy shit, he knew everything that was coming.
Actually, I got to tell you the truth. That was quite often my reaction when Ryan Tapera was pitching. With all due respect to Ryan Tapera, I'm just being honest here.
But it makes me like, again, it made me mad. It made me just lose my job here. So I won't be on next segment.
You're fine.
But it's wrong. It's wrong what they were doing to go to those levels to be able to do it, and then like to actually be. To tell the league like stuff is happening, and then like nobody really like only pay lip service to the investigation. To me, that makes me mad because again, how many guys like did get beat? How many coaches lost games to them? Like it's not right.
Here's what I don't get though, and I'll ask you guys this: this has gone on for 3 years, let's say.
Yes, probably more.
Mike Fiers talks about it. Nobody else. And yet after that, you started to hear guys come out. But why wasn't? I mean, somebody must have figured this out with the Astros 4 years ago and wasn't with the organization anymore. But
I think you see it. You're even seeing it now with the stuff with the coaches and hockey and all that stuff. Like we've lived playing a sport where like you kind of accept it and you want it to stop, but you don't go out and complain about it publicly. I don't know if that's the right way to go about it, because what happens right now is like it's a black eye on the game for sure. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the league wants this, you know, and again, I think these things are pretty preventable, but I think as players, like whatever your makeup is, like you don't want to go out and like make excuses to the public and think that people are stealing stuff from you.
Do you ever think that something was up when you were pitching, that somebody was using something to not just pitch tipping, but you know, some
cameras to steal signs? Or yeah,
in 2012, you know, I had a weird year. That might have been it. No, I honestly, that's one of the things I always worked on. Mm-hmm. Was just making sure I hit my pitches or somebody wasn't stealing signs and stuff like that. We always had a good system between me and my catchers as far as calling certain pitches and stuff like that. But, you know, I always did wonder, like, for me, Boston always hit me really well from start to the end of my career. And I always wondered, so one of the things I asked John Farrell when he came over, I was like, why did you guys hit me so, or why did they hit me so well? You were in there. And, I mean, he kind of didn't give me the answer I wanted to hear, but, I mean, he just was, he kind of bit around the bush a little bit. I don't know if he probably didn't want to throw him under the bus. I'm not saying they were stealing signs, but.
That one's been documented.
Yeah.
I think. And punished.
Exactly.
And I mean, the only thing he said was like, they take your changeup away. And I was like, okay, well, what does that mean? So, you know, we adjusted a game plan. I remember one game in 2012, me and Jose Molina kind of adjusted a different game plan. We're like, all right, we're going to take away your changeup. We're going to go fastball curveball. And it worked. So maybe that was it, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
You can give me, I can spend all day on this.
Well, yeah, I know you too. Can. Like I said, this was part of your, well, I'll ask you that. I'm going to ask you this. No names. Swear to God, no names.
I'll name everybody.
No names, but you're interviewing for jobs now.
Yes.
Do teams ask you?
Yes.
How good are you at stealing stuff?
I tell them I'm great. And I got to be honest with you.
But you have a reputation of being pretty good at it.
And the reason was because we had a great offensive ball club. Like, we were great. And it was funny because Brian McCann was with the Yankees, and he was always watching me. Like, always. Right. And I could always hear Girardi in the dugout, and they would always make their comments. They were super professional, but I knew they were upset, and they thought I was doing something. I played off that, so I moved around a lot just to kind of play off that a little bit. But as we weren't as good anymore, like 16, 17, and then McCann went to Houston. One game, he didn't look at me the whole game.
And you knew.
So I went over after the game. I said, dude, are we this bad? Were you kidding? You want to look at me? You know I'm not stealing signs anymore.
Well, remember when we had the whole thing that we thought, everyone thought we had somebody.
Oh, the man in white. The man in, I remember that. And it was Alex Rios who kind of started that too with when he went to the White Sox.
When I went to the Giants, I was with Jake Peavy once spring training, and he swore to this day that we were cheating. And I was like, what are you talking about? We sit in fourth place every year. Like,
if we're cheating, it ain't working.
The greatest one, Pete McCannon was in Philly one day, and I was out of the box, and McCannon sprints down the end of the dugout and yells at the first baseman, get him in the box. I called the league on this today. Hey, they just came from New York, and I told you guys all about this. Get him back in the box.
Well, you know, it is interesting because I remember when Joe Kerrigan was the Red Sox pitching coach, and I know from when he was in Montreal, he swore. And I can remember him telling me that it was only the Rogers Center because he said, you know, they got cameras and I know they got a camera and they got it in their dugout and I know that they got signs and all that and they got different angles and you can tell because guys go in the back all, he'd go on and on and I'd go, Joe, it ain't working. They're not very good. He goes, yeah, but they're still doing it, you know? They're still doing it. But I swear to God, and he'll go to his grave thinking that the Toronto Blue Jays had a technological system set up where they were stealing signs.
So does Jake Peavy. He's like, we know there's a guy. We went up to him, and I'm like, save it, dude. No. Like, I've never heard of it. Like, we never heard of it, obviously. Like, all the hitters were like, what are these guys talking about?
Hey, one thing our guys did really well, they picked up pitcher stuff. Like, Deion Navarro was the absolute best at picking up little things that the pitcher did in his glove or whatever to get signs. And they were great at it. And they would sell out to it, too. That was the other thing. And when they knew a slider was coming, and like Edwin, if Edwin would sit on a slider and if it was a strike, he was gonna get it. Yeah. So that was, not only did they have that kind of information because they picked up little things, they were able to execute on it.
And too. I think that's where it should stay. It should stay in between the lines. Like I said, if somebody's able to pick certain things from a pitcher, then it's your job as a pitcher to be able to fix it. And if there's a runner on second and somebody's looking in and stealing your signs, it's your job to fix it. You know, that's, I'm all for that. That's part of the game. But like I said, when you get to the technological, you know, cameras here, cameras there.
Wait till we have electronic strike zones. And the Russians start hacking into the Major League Baseball strike zone.
I'll be retiring.
Ricky, thanks so much for joining us, man.
For sure.